Sustainability is the marketing buzzword of the moment for businesses across a host of sectors, and thankfully, in many cases, it's more than just talk these days in how products are designed and how operations are carried out. And in consumer goods, there are some excellent brands not only focused on good design in products that are built to last, appealing to customers who are happy to spend a little bit more for quality, but also creating items that are helpful in shifting consumer habits. We've introduced you to some incredible companies on this show that exemplify sustainability. From creating proprietary eco-friendly fabrics for garments, making running shoes from merino wool, backpacks of plastic bottles, and handbags from old fire hoses. But this week we're talking hardware. You're listening to The Entrepreneurs with me, Daniel Bache. Today we'll meet two innovative companies driven by form and function and design that is so good, you might just change your habits and how you eat and drink in a way that will have real impact. We'll head to San Francisco to meet the co-founder of Lark, makers of a self-cleaning water bottle that filters water and kills bacteria. But first, lunchboxes. Dan Black is the co-founder of Black & Bloom, a London-based company that makes a range of stainless steel and glass lunchboxes, bowls, cutlery, and water bottles. Dan and co-founder Martin Bloom met while studying industrial design at Northumbria University in the late 90s and started a company not long after. They made all sorts of things, mostly for other brands to start, from doorstops to dish racks and candelabras. But it wasn't until 2014 when Dan took over and moved the company into the food and drink on-the-go category. The company has been growing steadily ever since and recently joined 1% for the Planet, donating a portion of all of their sales, and are working to become climate neutral. Recently, they partnered with Prada to make co-branded lunchboxes for sale here in London at Selfridges. I spoke to Dan to hear about impact and his philosophy in design.
We've been designing our own products for over 20 years, and we didn't start in this category. We did things like doorstops and lighting and barbecues and fans and all sorts of different products. We launched our first lunchbox. It was 12 years ago now, and our first water bottle, a filter water bottle, which used natural charcoal, I think about 11 years ago. And at the time, the market wasn't what it is now. So first of all, there wasn't the same awareness about sustainability, but people also didn't realize the benefits that you could get in terms of sort of health and wellness, as well as the environmental benefits of taking your own food and drink with you. At the time, children got fun lunch boxes, but adults were making do with sort of boring food containers. And we took inspiration from Japan, where they have developed their bento lunch boxes into an almost art form. We also took inspiration from India, where they use tiffin boxes, and somehow in the West, we were just missing a trick. So when we first introduced our dedicated adult lunch box, it was taking inspiration from Japan in terms of presenting the food in a better way, and food that's presented well tastes better. So we didn't set out to say we're going to be doing this environmental drive. We just wanted to improve the offering and change the way that people took food with them. And in the last 2 years, the company has focused purely on that category. And it's fantastic to be designing functional products which people can use every day, which just greatly improve their life, whether it's health and wellness or whether it's their environmental footprint.
It's interesting sort of thinking about that whole history you've described and sort of shifting into this category over time, I guess, sort of being led in that direction, perhaps by the consumer or your own design interests or what you felt sort of the market needed. Were you surprised at all to sort of shift in that direction? Let's say 12 years ago, you started playing in this category or designing things in the lunchbox category. Was that a surprise to you in the direction the company went?
Yeah, it's a huge, I'm a trained product designer. You know, I did internships at IDEO and Frog Design back in the day, a long time ago. But you don't set out being an industrial designer to say, I'm going to design water bottles, lunch boxes and travel cups for the majority of your career. But bizarrely, I think as a product designer, the tighter the brief, almost the more creativity you can give, because you become a specialist in that category. And we aren't the same as a lot of other companies out there. You've got a lot of premium brands out there in our category who still just take an existing product off the showroom shelf and put their color and logo on it. We develop our products from scratch, you know, design, primarily we're a design company. We're passionate about every single product we produce. We will only do our own products. The tooling belongs to us, the designs belong to us. They are unique, they're original. And I think that's the difference. We want to be innovative. Every time we launch a new product, whenever we've launched a new product over the last 20 years, we've always gone, this product can only exist if we really can justify why it should exist. You know, has it got a point of difference? Does it deserve to be out there? And that kind of almost plays a little bit into our the environmental aspect, because as product designers, you know, we're partly to blame for the environmental crisis we're in. You know, people don't need a lot of the products they own. And I think that there's a shift of awareness now in terms of people understanding, you know, the whole mantra of buy once, buy well, or I'm not rich enough to buy cheap products. And I think we want to do products which genuinely deserve to exist and serve a purpose to help encourage people or make it easier for people to live a you know, more environmental lifestyle.
Yeah, that sustainability part obviously so big right now and so important as well. You know, when we think of good design, we think of form and function. I'm a huge fan of the launch boxes and a few of the other pieces that you have done. Could you talk to us a little bit about that design and sort of how you've tried to make a functional part of that? I think that's perhaps part of the nod to Japan, as you already mentioned.
So when we start with designing a new product, you know, we always look at the brief and go, what function does this product have to perform? We look at the market in terms of analyzing what's already out there. And so often with lots of categories, because a lot of brands just take an existing product from a factory shelf, they don't innovate. You know, they don't think, how do we make this product better? How do we just really improve that? And we're probably not the same as a lot of other design consultancies in the sense of sometimes we look to the past. You know, we look at antiques. If you look at old thermoses or you look at sort of old lunch canteens, if you found them in an antique shop, you can see how they have a real quality, what we call soul. So there's too many products on the market nowadays, which I would say are fashion led. So they're all about color or pattern, or they're not designed to age well. And if you look at sort of old army canteens and things like that, they have such a quality and you can see that they've been used. And sometimes these products get better with age. And too often with modern design, I would say that that's missing. And so because we're doing a functional, perhaps everyday product, something that someone might use, you know, five times a week even, we want to design it in a way which it can take a scratch, it can take a dent, and that will only add to its charm, if that makes sense. And if we can do a good job on the design side and people enjoy using these products, I think that's when these products develop soul and suddenly you've got a product which people kind of cherish. I mean, it's very hard with certain materials to add that to it. At the moment, I would say there's a sort of backlash against plastic, and the problem with plastic is that it's incredibly cheap and it doesn't naturally age well. So, but at the same time, plastic is not the worst material in terms of how it's got so many advantages in terms of weight and moldability. So our challenge is how do we, if we're going to include plastic, how do we design plastic so that it ages well? If we're going to use things like stainless steel or glass, how do we expose that material so that it's the core nature of a product? And so we want to make sure that when we design a product, first of all, it functions well, and secondly, that it will age well as well.
And what's your philosophy on the range that you do offer and adding to that? Obviously, you said there is 20 years of experience here and you know, more than a decade now in this category of lunchboxes and water bottles and things like that. Do you think about improving the line subtly when you release new products, or is it sticking to a core thing or trying to add to the range and what people are looking for?
I think it's a bit of both. When we look at our existing range, and because we're sort of tight in category, we're not obviously just water bottles, but we do water bottles, lunch boxes and accessories. But we look at the range in two ways. We look at it horizontally. So horizontally is in relation to say we've got a water bottle, we've got a lunch box, but have we got different sizes of those products? Have we got a travel mug? Have we got lunch bag and cutlery? And we go across, what would someone need in order to help take their food and drink with them? So that gives us a broad spectrum of products we can go at. But we also look at it vertically in relation to price, because clearly not everyone is going to pay a high price for a product. Is there a way that we can do a more streamlined version? There is a market for higher value items, but we sell our products in over 60 countries in a wide variety of stores. And it goes from, you know, sort of the Museum of Modern Art in New York, where people might pay a premium for a product and appreciate the design, to a more mass market outlet where someone, if you put it next to a standard boring plastic food container, someone might be challenged to pay a higher price for a stainless steel lunchbox. But in all cases, we need to have improved functionality compared to what's out there. So we were the first ones on the market to introduce a full stainless steel leak-proof lunchbox. No one else had done that before. We were the first ones to introduce a natural filter, charcoal filter water bottle designed for on the go to help encourage people to drink their tap water by making it taste better.
And what about on the market in trying to grow the brand? Obviously, these days, direct-to-consumer and having a good web store is so important, along with selling through other digital partners. But with a product like this, well-designed, it looks great. I imagine it does well when people pick it up in retail stores as well. You do have some partners, and I know you've recently launched co-branded lunchboxes with Prada at Selfridges. Tell me about that.
That was a really exciting inquiry. So Prada have launched an initiative in Selfridges. I think it launched, but it's going out worldwide, called Renylon. And it's this amazingly sort of sustainable sort of direction they are taking with their fashion side in relation to recycled fabric. And they partnered with us where they've used our lunchboxes and we've co-branded the products to sell them in their store. So they launched it in Selfridges in London. This was about a month ago, and it had just the most incredible reaction. And it's now being rolled out worldwide in all their stores, as far as I'm aware. And that was with four products. So it was three of our lunchboxes and our cutlery set.
Now, do you have to be careful there a little bit for your own brand? Obviously, a lot of people will want to align themselves with something that is sustainable and a well-made product, of course. But this is your design, your baby. So how does that work in partnering with another brand in that sense?
I remember when I started the company with my business partner, who's called Martin Blum, and I remember my father saying to me, don't put your name above the shop front. So we are called Black and Bloom. So we put our names to everything, and you do have to protect that. But at the same time, we don't sell non-branded versions, and we wouldn't sell our existing designs to someone else who wants to put their logo on it. We will only ever co-brand. And so while there's a risk and element of being associated with other brands, I think we're fairly picky. We won't just give our products to anyone. We don't sell them out. And Prada is obviously an amazing brand to be associated with. We are, you know, at the premium end of our market. You know, you can buy products cheaper, you always can. And a lot of retailers today will do what's called own label products, where they, again, they import a product from a factory and just put their retailer's name on it as an own label product. And it obviously cuts out, in the business model, it cuts out the our side, our type of business from it, which allows them to sell it cheaper. So we are competing with that, and Amazon have lots of products like that on the marketplace. In this case, it's not quite the same. They are obviously charging a premium because of the fact that they have such a recognized design name. And that's very exciting for us because of the initial success. It proves the fact that people are willing to pay for design. And we are the first ones to recognize that we are not a, you know, we're not a household name in any stretch. We are not a big name and people don't know us. I think in the design world, there might be people who do know us and will appreciate what we do and are willing to pay for it. But certainly not on the high street, I would say, people don't know our brand. And that's something we're working towards, because ultimately we want to do the best possible products. And we can only do those products which are significantly different to others on the market by people being prepared to pay for quality.
You know, we talked about the interest today from consumers in not only buying good things, of course, but in being sustainable and thinking about their impact. I can't help but think there is such great possibility in partnering with other types of businesses. Being from North America myself, I was actually quite surprised to see how almost wasteful the takeaway culture is here and in other countries as well, just with packaging and things like that. Obviously, Central London, a big city, your office is based here and you'll see that all the time as well. But even restaurants, takeaway is such a huge business now around the world. Is there opportunity there to partner with businesses, not only to get your product out there and the brand name out there, but to have an impact sort of in this world of waste?
Absolutely, 100%. And that's one of the areas we're looking into. So there's a number of businesses we're in discussions with about reuse. So in terms of whether it's cafe culture, you know, it's complicated to sort of set this kind of thing up. But what we have got is we have got designs coming down our sort of new product development pipeline, which will be perfect for this in terms of you go into a cafe and they give you a, rather than a disposable lunchbox, they'll give you one which you can take back. And we can't wait for that sort of change in mentality. And I think, you know, the market sort of, it's hard to introduce this thing, but once someone gets used to this change, once where everyone's doing it, then it's easy. You know, we're seeing amongst our customers huge growth in the sort of the more health and sustainable type shops, you know, zero packaging shops. And we need to think, where will the market be in 5 years' time? Because I think there's just a growing shift in that direction. That's where we're seeing our growth, and that's where we're sort of focusing our new product development.
that's certainly something interesting to watch. Dan, just lastly, I wonder if we could look a little bit more at opportunity and what you might have in the works in the weeks and months ahead. Obviously, we're in a very strange time now, but I think a lot of the conversations that are happening are accelerated sort of versions of what was already happening, let's say, on our culture and our thoughts about sustainability, things like that, wanting to buy good products, wanting to know where they're bought. People will be thinking a lot more about that. So what does it mean for you, and what else might we see from Black & Bloom in the months ahead, let's say?
Well, as I said, when we do NPD, new product development, we do look horizontally. So one product category, which we haven't done, is travel cups. And we've got two new travel cups launching very, very soon. And that's really exciting. And again, there's key market players out there who have established, you know, the market for this type of product. But we'd like to think that what we're bringing to the market is new, fresh, exciting, has advantages which no other product on the market has. So we're really excited by that. We're doing some zero waste packaging products. We are doing an insulated leak-proof lunch bag, which is really nice. We have normally about 25 to 30 new products in development at any one time. We have to work. Normally it takes about 2 years from start to finish, you know, sort of initial idea, sketching, model making, to go all the way through to sort of having a final production. So 2 years is a long time. So we have a 3-year sort of NPD, new product development pipeline, and know the products which we've got coming to market. But there's some super exciting ones, and that always keeps me engaged. I'm always excited about the new things we're working on.
Dan, very good to talk, and thank you so much for your time.
Fantastic. Good to talk to you, Daniel.
Dan Black, co-founder and lead designer of Black & Bloom. You can learn more at black-blum.com. Next up, we're off to San Francisco. Justin Wang is the CEO and co-founder of Lark, makers of a premium self-cleaning range of water bottles and, more recently, an at-home pitcher. Justin is the former president of Forio, an award-winning beauty technology company, and was also an investor with L Capital, the investment arm of Louis Vuitton Moët Hennessy. Justin has great experience in strategy and building brands, and in 2017 decided to launch his own venture with Lark. Their first product launched, interestingly, on Kickstarter. They raised more than $1.5 million in just 30 days and haven't looked back. Now, of course, there are many, many water bottle companies that can talk about reducing plastic waste, but nothing quite like this. The Lark bottles use UVC light to kill viruses and bacteria, and their new pitcher adds a plant-based filter to also remove unwanted contaminants like lead, mercury, and chlorine for drinking water at home. Here's my conversation with Justin now with the story of Lark.
Having grown up in California, one of my passions was always for the outdoors. And, you know, I was looking at some of the headlines that were out there in terms of water bowls and our consumption of unrecyclable and unsustainable amount of single-use plastic water bottles. I kind of realized that, you know, even my own life, really, this was a problem as well. You know, the Lark bottle was our first product. The idea behind Lark was started in 2017 when I met my co-founder, Doug Collins, and Dr. Bob Walker, who are the more of the technical minds behind the business. And this Lark bottle really came from trying to solve a problem I was personally having with existing water bottles. Several years ago, I made a pledge to try to completely cut off my consumption of single-use plastic water bottles. And to make that transition easier, I purchased, you know, several reusable water bottles to make that easier. But sure enough, after a few months, oftentimes these reusable water bottles would find their way to the back of a cabinet or get lost in a gym bag, kind of started to collect dust. And I found myself, you know, still using plastic one-use water bottles from time to time. I had a busy schedule, and oftentimes these moments came from when I was running out the door on the go. My reusable water bottle would be frequently too dirty, where I forgot to clean it, forgot to take it out of my gym bag, or left it in a hot car over the weekend where I'm at desk. And it's these moments that, you know, when I was up running out the door, kind of catching that meeting, that, you know, single-use plastic water bottles would then be involved. I realized if I was having these issues, other people must be too. And sure enough, before we introduced a product, we surveyed over 200 people across the country in the US. What we found was that, you know, people love their reusable water bottles, but they had three primary problems when it came to using them. One, they get dirty and they get smelly pretty easily. And once they are dirty, they're hard to clean. And finally, probably most importantly, they don't purify water on the go. And we drink about, 70-80% of our water on the go, outside of the home and, kind of in the office and things like this. The problem with reusable water bottles wasn't availability. You could literally go into any coffee shop, find them on sale, into any grocery store or department store. That it kind of fell short of solving the problem for the consumer. And the proof is in the numbers, right? Single-use plastic water bottles is nearly a $300 billion industry, and reusable options make up less than 8% of that. And for Lark, the vision is to change that by taking a consumer-centric approach to innovation in the hydration space.
It's a fascinating story, and we all will know about having water bottles and them being collected in the cabinet or on the desk and not actually used. I'm so curious if you could explain for listeners who might not have seen or heard about the bottle what it actually does. You talked about purifying water, killing bacteria sort of on the go. For people who might not have seen it, I guess we could describe it as a bit of a supercharged, incredible water bottle. So talk to us a little bit about the actual sort of concept and how you went about creating that.
The Lark bottle was designed to solve those three pain points by addressing them directly on the head. And number one, we purify water at a simple touch of a button with our proprietary PureViz technology, which is using a UVC LED technology to eradicate any kind of biocontaminants like bacteria, viruses, and mold, which, if you ever used a water bottle, it's most commonly going to be introduced through your own mouth. And the second is that we also have what we call a self-cleaning mode that turns on in the background every couple of hours, so that if you were to leave your water bottle in a gym bag in a hot car, in some of those situations that I mentioned earlier, that it's going to self-maintain itself so that, the next time you go to grab it, maybe that's a day from now, maybe that's 3 days from now, it would have been keeping any kind of biocontaminants at bay. So in that sense, we're getting rid of that stinky water bottle syndrome. And because by solving those pain points, what we see is that people are much more likely to keep to their more sustainable option because they trust the water more and they have a better experience overall with their water bottles.
You mentioned your time at Forio beforehand, running that company as its president in the US. You will know very well about consumer products, of course, and marketing. Talk to me a little bit about why Kickstarter is such an important part of the Lark story. I found that so interesting because it has to do with your latest product as well, which we can come on to. But talk to me about the Kickstarter campaign and how that got going.
Absolutely. This is going back to 2017, end of 2017, when we had done our consumer surveys already and, worked on an initial prototype of the product with my partners. And what we really wanted to know is, how much consumer demand, how much interest was there for the product. You spent all months and months and years working on the concept and, you release into the wild. It's almost like a child being released into the wild. And what we really wanted to do through crowdfunding process was to really understand any final adjustments to the product, understand the reception from the consumer, get any feedback that we can before releasing the product more broadly. And so we did a Kickstarter at the end of 2017 that wrapped up actually the beginning of 2018 that ended up raising over 1.7 million across a couple of platforms with over 15,000 supporters in a little over 2 months. So we really knew that we had something on our hands that we could scale. And on top of that, we were able to kind of fine tune some of the final parameters of the product and some of the details of the product, like different modes and, different colors, and understand what people were really looking for and what were some of the key insight with the product when consumers really had to put down a credit card, which is very different from kind of just a survey response. So, we did a crowdfunding campaign back then and, we felt like we just learned so much. And this time around, we're launching our at-home product, the Lark Pitcher, which has just gone live a little over a week ago on Kickstarter as well. And we're doing a very similar approach in that we're going back to our early adopter, early backers on these platforms and, trying to understand their perspective of hydrating at home as well as how this new product has solved some of those pain points as well. So the Lark Pitcher is our first foray into the home. And as I mentioned, especially in a COVID environment, people are hydrating more and more at home. In fact, probably 80-90% of our water is now coming from the home. And that is a place where we're looking to be healthier and looking to be more sustainable as well.
So on to the picture, I would love to just hear a little bit more about what that does. Of course, many of us will be familiar with in-home filtration systems and, of course, the perhaps more taxing mode for our planet, and that is delivery of heavy water bottles. So talk to me a little bit about the plan with this and what it actually does.
Yeah, the LARC pitcher is the first two-stage countertop purification system. Traditional water filters simply use filters to kind of trap and contain contaminants where they could quickly multiply and become a breeding ground for additional contaminants. In our white paper that we recently published, we see that in 1 to 2 weeks, the typical water filter is actually starting to make your water worse in many cases. We take a two-stage approach. In the first stage, it's a very innovative filter that removes heavy metals like lead, copper, as well as chlorine and VOCs and much more than your typical filter. And then the second stage, and a very neat second stage, we used our patented PureViz technology to then destroy any contaminants that may have escaped the first stage. That includes things like mold, viruses, and bacteria. What is more is that our filters in the first stage also use a plant-based carbon that uses 75% less plastic than typical water filters, as well as the last 50% longer. What that does is that allow us to have a smaller carbon footprint when people are replacing water filters and things like this. We also have an intelligent filter replacement system. So rather than counting how many days you have left on your filter, which might be very different in terms of if you're a family of one or a family of five, we actually track the amount of volume that's going through the filter to make sure that you're replacing your filter both on time, but also in a way that is efficient so that you save both money, but also better for your health as well.
You know, throughout this pandemic, and of course, in light of all the wildfires in your neck of the woods out on the West Coast, a lot of us, of course, are thinking about our impact on the planet, but also our own health. And I think a lot of things, let's say, have been accelerated as far as trends, as far as sustainability, as far as interest for a lot of people in this past couple of months, 6 months. Is there anything for you as a business owner that has sort of been reaffirming in the direction that you are going or interesting from your standpoint as the head of a company?
Yeah, obviously this is just an absolutely crazy year, both with the pandemic, but also with what's going on in, you know, in the rest of the world and with our environment, with the wildfires raging. And then what we feel like is that our mission is more relevant than ever, both from a, you know, human health perspective, but also in terms of providing sustainable solutions for the environment. So with that said, you know, I think we see a lot of disruption to business in general, right? Obviously to business plans, and we have had to adapt. We're lucky enough where the demand for healthier product and more sustainable product is still growing really, really rapidly. But certainly we've had to make some changes to how the way we work as well. But we feel more passionate than ever that our vision for a more sustainable and healthier future through within our focus of hydration is more important than ever before. Just simply, I think the plastic industry is having probably a boom right now with all the single-use materials, whether those are face masks or gloves or any other kind of single-use personal protection gear or anything else that's out there today. So we see a lot more proliferation of single-use products and single-use plastic. And I think, you know, that's obviously going to have a longer term impact on our environment. So anywhere where we could cut down our impact, whether that's hydration or anything else, it's going to be more important and it's going to play a bigger part of our future as well.
Very well said. Justin, thank you so much for your time. It's fascinating to hear about the story, and we wish you the best of luck, and hopefully we can connect again in the near future to get an update.
Thank you so much, Daniel. It was a pleasure to speak with you today.
Justin Wang, CEO and co-founder of LARC. Learn more at livelarq.com. That's all for this week. My thanks to Christy Evans, who mixed and edited this show. I'm Daniel Bache. Thank you so much for listening, and goodbye.